Hey, it's the Pete.
For
the 666 cast, episode, is it 37? I think it's 37, yeah. It has been an interesting week for me. I don't know how interesting this is going to be to hear for you, but, man, where to begin? Okay, so... I switched away. Or I got myself an Android phone, so I'm excited about that as a gadget fanatic. Very excited to have a phone that does not kind of enslave me a little bit to the whims of Apple engineers. It's frustrating to see so many people sort of willingly accept. The limitations put on them. This isn't, I think I may have mentioned this in the previous podcast, because I think it's a trend where we're all sort of happy to take, you know, other people's choices for us as, you know, sort of, you know, with the assumption that it's the best for us. You know, it was like when Bush was, you know, banging the war drum to go into Iraq, it was all like, you know, there were so many people who were just like, well, he must have access to intelligence that I don't. And it's like, yeah, okay, so that takes away the moral imperative of, you know, not invading countries that haven't invaded us yet. Apparently it does, because that was the excuse a lot of people used. So, and as I am an Apple guy, it's like, I understand, it's like, you know, it's nice to have something that just works, that you don't have to mess with, and you don't have to, you know, tell what to do, you know, so sometimes it is easier to just roll with it and go, okay, well, all right, so I can't, you know, install anything I want on my iPhone, but as it turns out, you know, or let me finish my thought, sorry, I can't install anything I want on my iPhone, but the compromise will be okay because there'll be enough other benefits. Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, the iPhone is a great little device, and I can't speak to the iPhone 4, the iPhone 3GS, since I don't have them. I do understand that they do have some nicer features, but I don't think they would outweigh the fact that that I can't just, you know, put... What? I can't try out software on it. I can't put my own software on it. I have to... quite literally hack it in order to do that. And it's my device, you know, it's like so many other phones and other devices, you know, it's like, so I switched up to this Android phone and it was amazing. I got in this massive argument with the people, yes, multiple people at the Best Buy, one of the Best Buys here in New York, the one on 23rd and 6th, I think, you know, it was amazing how rude they were, actually. Don't ever buy a cell phone from that Best Buy. They basically got into it with me because I didn't like their Best Buy's definition of no contract phones. Because I wasn't buying I bought a Dell Streak off contract. I paid full price, or I pulled fee price for it. What? I'm a little tired still. That's my coffee brewing in the background. And so the coupon, I had this 10% off coupon, and it said, you know, you could use it on no contract phones, no contract mobile phones. And I thought, this is perfect. That's the Dell Streak. It's a mobile phone. It's, you know, it's not on contract. And so they're like, no, this is still a contract phone. And I'm like, but I'm not buying it on contract. But it's still a contract. Oh, well, that's not clear from the coupon. Well, sorry, that's the way it is. You have to know that coming in. I'm like, but I didn't. And so you came in and, you know, and anyway, she was rude. I don't know. Why did I get off on that tangent? Maybe I shouldn't have done this first thing after waking up on a Sunday morning. Sorry, folks. Anyway, the point is iPhone, you know, as great a device as it does feel very stifling to somebody like me. If you don't, you know, use your phone for very much. If you do just make calls or emails or whatever browser, you know, surf the web a little bit, it's not that big of a deal. There are bugs in the browser that still to this day drive me nuts, though, but I won't bother going into them. And actually, having used an Android phone now for almost 48 hours, I can say that there are a few little things that I miss, minor things. But it's just a question of tweaking with an Android phone, because I don't like their stock browser's kind of bland, and everybody has recommended online Dolphin browser, I guess. But Dolphin browser is kind of weird. Like, I don't like some of the layouts. Also, I do miss multi-touch. That's nice. But I'm dealing without it. It's fine. Because that's the big drag with the AT&T locked Dell Streak, is that AT&T isn't letting Dell update to the latest version of Android yet. So there's a lot of cool features on other Android phones that I don't get yet. But it's not Apple. I already feel freer because guess what? I can drag and drop stuff right on and right off. Apple assumes you're gonna break the law. Apple assumes you're going to basically file share. You know, like put MP3s on your friend's iPod. So that's what they assume, and that's why they don't let you take things off the iPod. You have to get like special software to hack it, essentially. So you can't. And that's just lame. And I'm just like tired of that kind of, you know, managing of my actual personal choices in life. I remember when I got my first iPod, I was used to, you know, this is back in 2003. Good Lord, 7 years ago. I was so used to just, you know, the iPod or the MP3 players that had existed up to that point, where you literally just dragged and dropped your music onto a media card and stuck it in the player, and then you went to town. That's what I was used to, and that's not what the iPod is. You have to have all your ID tags or your ID3 tags, this little, you know, the thing where it says, you know, artist and song title and all that stuff. You have to have all that stuff worked out. And you know how long it took me? Even back then, when my music collection was, you know, only a few gigs, it was just such a daunting task that I just said, forget it. I'm not ever going to have the time to do all that. So I just basically organized every album as I put it onto the iPod, only to have to do it again if I happen to delete it off the iPod and want to listen to it again some other day, you know, because it was just such a huge pain in the ass. Because you can copy it back, again, without the special software. And I don't even think they had special software back then. You just couldn't do it. Anyway, the long story short is that Apple thinks everybody is going to be, you know, illegally file sharing. And that kind of assumption of guilt pisses me off, you know. And that started back in 2003, you know. And it's, like, only gotten worse, you know. DRM is everywhere, you know. And it's just, it just bothers me. I don't understand why we trust companies to make these decisions for us when really, you know, we're not all criminals. I mean, and then ultimately, hey, what's the big deal if I give a song to a friend of mine? Or an album to a friend of mine. Are you going to fucking go broke, Mr. Record Executive? I don't think so. But Apple thinks so. You know? And I'm sure Apple... Or I'm sure record executives think they will. But it's just bullshit. I just cannot stand how... just lame everybody is. Everybody's so greedy. I think I mentioned this as well a bunch of podcasts ago. I had a conversation with an acquaintance or a friend of mine. And suggested that the solution to our problems is banning rich people. And obviously we can't ban rich people. But one thing we can do is, or one thing we should think about doing, is putting a lockdown on financial freedom. You know, everybody always thinks that money is the ultimate motivator, that it's going to inspire us to come up with new innovations. Well, I think I mentioned this last week, and there's a post. I think I cross posted this reblogged this on website 666. There's a wonderful piece that Gizmodo did about an answering machine, the very first answering machine. I bet you don't know what year it was unless you heard the story. the very first answering machine existed in, I think it was 1934. But somebody at Bell Labs developed it, and the reason it would be another 40 to 50 years before answering machines really came into common use was because Bell Labs, or essentially what would become AT&T, back then it was just, you know, Bell Telephone, they thought this would be, this would disrupt their business to an extent where it could be endangered. Like, people would stop using phones and they'd just be sending each other voice messages, you know? And it's like, well, that obviously didn't happen. But how stupid was that, you know? And so they squelched this innovation for, you know, nearly half a century. And, you know, that's capitalism. That's, you know, financial incentive. You know, they had incentives to... I mean, they could have said, let's shrink this down and make this cheap enough for people to put in their homes and then just trust that people would still talk on the phone, I guess. I don't know. They were just scared. And that kind of stuff is... That's what I'm talking about. When I talk about, you know, capitalism not necessarily being a good thing. You know, I've said this 1,000 times before. But my point here is just that... financial stuff is supposed to, money is supposed to be the incentive to get people to do things. And I don't think that's the case. And shit, I totally lost my train of thought. Oh, man, I shouldn't have done this. It's too early for my brain. It's actually not that early, but I'm just really tired. Because I got my new Android phone, so I've been doing all sorts of stuff with it, as opposed to sleeping. Hot coffee and cold orange juice. Yay! My favorite breakfast combination. Excuse me. Anyway, I suppose I should do some dishes since I'm awake. But my coffee's in here now. I'll bring it back in to the kitchen. All right. So I guess what I'm getting at is... there's a disturbing amount of willful, that's it. Knew I knew the word. Willful embracing of hegemony. Hegemony is one of those obnoxious words that I think at some point was in pretty fairly common parlance, but as we got dumber, we stopped using words like that. Hegemony means the dominating mindset of a culture. Well, it doesn't have to be a culture necessarily. Well, yeah, actually, I think it does. Anyway, but it's the idea that, you know, somehow if everyone else is doing it, it must be cool. You know, and that I find kind of... I've always found it disturbing just because I've always been kind of an outsider-type fellow. Hang on, I'm going to plug the external battery in because I forgot to charge my iPod Nano. All right. So, yeah, and I just, I feel like we're getting into this, and we probably have kind of been in this mindset where, you know, oh, we want to do, we just want to go with the flow, as it were, you know, with the way, I mean, I guess it made sense during the early days of TWAT, which is what I call the war against terror. In the early days, it was, you know, everybody was so scared and fearful and stuff, so I guess it made sense to just sort of drop into the pack mentality. But, you know, we see now that despite, you know, the FBI's attempts to trump up threats, there aren't really many threats to us as far as terrorism goes. You know, most of the threats happen overseas. We're kind of, you know, we're kind of isolated here in North America, which is really nice, actually, because it keeps us safe in that way. The other advantage, the other thing that I think people maybe subconsciously, if not consciously, have noticed is that, you know, terrorists are stupid. You know, I mean, the reason we don't have real comic book supervillains who think they can take over the world is because they know they won't get away with it. If you're smart enough to do it, you're smart enough to know better. You know, and so only idiots actually try to be professional terrorists and try to, you know, change stuff through violence, because it's just like, no, I'm going to get caught, you know, or no, they're going to kill me and I don't want to get killed. You know, it's usually a fairly simple equation there, but people are too into being scared. Shit, what was I? Oh yeah, yeah. I'm watching this anime. I know another thing you may or may not care about. I'm watching this anime now called Code Geass, G-E-A-S-S. I think it's a bit of English there, and they meant to say gears, but regardless. The story, it takes place in an alternate, roughly modern day. It's actually 2018, but it's roughly modern day. And it's basically a world where the British Empire never crumbled. And they've continued to take over huge swaths of the planet, including Japan. And one of the kids, one of the lead characters, is essentially a British royal who has been supremely estranged from his dad, who basically had sex with some, I guess he had a bunch of different wives or something like that, and the lead character is this guy called Lelouch, and he's I guess when his mother was assassinated, which I guess severed his ties with the king, and so the king basically just said, you know, fuck off, get out of here, and the fact that he didn't care about his mother and the fact that the king didn't care about him made him very angry, and he sort of had this anti-British resentment that he didn't do much about simply because he didn't feel like he had much means. And then at some point in the beginning, towards the beginning of the story, we discover that, or not we discover, but he discovers this woman who gives him this superpower. She's kind of, I haven't watched enough of the show yet, so I don't know who she is or where she's really coming from, but she's essentially divine intervention. And she gives him this power called Gears. And this is why I think it's Gears, because it, you know, basically allows him to reach into your brain and tell you what to do. And it's sort of like an extra, I think they're comparing it to gears in a machine. And it's sort of like giving you a new gear, part of your brain that does something new. And does that make sense? I don't know. Because they don't explain it very well. They just keep talking about these, you know, oh, he's got gears. I'm like, all right, whatever. Anyway, but he's got this power. He can tell you what to do, and you have to do it. And at one point, he makes the comment where it's like, he's not, what he does isn't that different from what we do already to ourselves. So that's I think his moral justification for using the power is that, you know, so many people just believe the lie anyway. And just because it's more pleasant than accepting the reality that, you know, our particular lives suck ass or whatever. You know what I mean? And I think that's a really powerful statement about humanity in general. And I obviously, because that's what they're making the comment about humanity in general. This isn't some isolated thing, you know. And basically, he explains this is, I think, the justification for why there aren't more rebellions in Japan against the British Empire on this show, because people want to believe that they are better off under control. And I think that actually might be a statement about Japanese culture in general, since they lived so long under the emperor. As God mentality, you know, and I think we all want to do that. We all want to ascribe to a bigger, higher power that, you know, can sort of quietly take responsibility away from us, so we don't have to take responsibility for ourselves. I really do think that's what's going on here, ultimately, in our you know, quest for fear, because. You know, we want to believe that somebody's out to get us so we can feel important, so we can, you know, make fewer choices. Oh, well, I had a friend who refused to go with me to Times Square on New Year's Eve. This is before 9/11, actually, because she was afraid someone would crash a plane into New York City on New Year's Eve. So, yeah. But that friend missed out on being there when I proposed to my wife. So maybe you should not live in fear, or else you'll miss out on big opportunities, big events, you know, that kind of thing.
And I really did want her there, but my friend. Obviously, my wife was there. Anyway, so that whole fear thing. But, you know, and here was this rational, college-educated, you know, adult who was like, no, I'm not coming into New York for that because I'm afraid of a terrorist attack. You know, and it's like there was no proof. There had never been an attack on American soil, a foreign terrorist attack on American soil in a long time, and it was just a very irrational thing. And she missed out on an incredibly important part of my life, and it was something that was really special to me. Anyway, the point is, you know, she was living in fear, and so many people want to live in fear. So many people want to think something bad can happen, you know, and yet most of us live our lives fully, and we get old, and we die of old age, or other old age-related diseases, you know? And, you know, isn't that the worst punishment of them all, really? Surviving so long that you see all sorts of crazy shit happen. But not to you, you know? That's the thing. And I don't understand that. And so we're happy to give over the responsibility for our actions and our thoughts to somebody else. So if Glenn Beck, says, oh, we have to be careful of, you know, George Soros, you know, it's like, okay, cool. I'll just trust Glenn Beck and not do my own research and find out that George Soros is, you know, maybe a questionably, politically questionable person, but he's also a huge philanthropist and has, you know, fights for all sorts of liberal causes. Well, I don't know if fight is the right word, but anyway, because I have researched George Soros, and he is not quite as evil as, you know, Beck makes him out to be, obviously. You know, so that's all I'm saying. How are we doing on time here?
22 minutes.
Okay. So, you know, and of course, you gotta, you know, if you're gonna criticize somebody else, you gotta make sure that you can stand up to your own criticism. So, you know, so what do I do that, you know, that ascribes to a higher, what do I do to try to dodge my responsibility? What do I, you know, who do I hand over my responsibility to? If that makes sense. I don't know. I don't think I do. I do tend to bitch about society an awful lot. So I tend to want to blame society. I think I'm too close to myself, too close to my reality to be able to look at what I am doing wrong. Effectively. You know what I mean? It's like, so I'm not able to, you know, compare myself and say, well, I should, you know, I blame society for the things. Oh, no, here's a good idea. Okay, having a regular day job, or here's a good example, not a good idea. Having a regular day job, because getting a day job, that's not a good idea. Having a regular day job, which I haven't had in quite a few years, and I mean like an office gig or something like that. I've had individual jobs, videography work I do, and other writing, a few writing gigs, but nothing stable, nothing steady. You know, I do blame society for this. I blame our economy. I blame Hollywood. Boy, do I blame Hollywood. Woo-wee! You know, and yeah, I could play the game. I could compromise. I could sacrifice. I could say, okay, fine. I'll write the script to, you know, Dude, Where's My Car 2. I'll even write it on spec. I could do that, but then I'd hate myself. You know, and that's really what I'd like to avoid. But maybe that's part of, you know, the way life works, that you do have to eat some shit every once in a while and smile about it, you know? I don't know. I mean, that's a whole nother podcast, but I do think that's what I do, and I don't know if I'm capable of taking more personal responsibility than I already am, because I do try to figure ways around the problems society has, the sort of short-sightedness that it has, the things I whine about, the things I complain about, the fact that, you know, I can pitch a great story to somebody in Hollywood and they can go, yeah, that's a great story. But then they go, well, I don't know who would want it. I actually had that happen to me once. I pitched to an actually fairly high-powered guy a cartoon project, and he had no idea what to do with it. And I'm like, use your imagination, dude. And I'm thinking, oops, that was my mistake. Anyway, and so I blame Hollywood, but really what I should have done back then was, you know, just work harder at finding the people who would look at that story I pitched to that guy and think, hey, this is really good, you know, and it got hard to do because I'm not hugely extra social. I'm not an extrovert, really. I know it seems odd because I do all this weird media stuff on the internet. But mostly I do it by myself. I don't rely on other people. I don't interact with other people to make it happen, usually. Because dealing with people is tiring for me. And I don't know why. It's just part of who I am. It's not that I'm lazy. It just takes a lot out of me. And I think because I'm, you know, control freak but anyway, you get where I'm going with this. You know, and so I think I try to sort of drop into the sort of rebellious, you know, beatnik style, you know, life's a sham, man, kind of thing. Everything's a lie, you know, like that. A little bit too much rather than trying to, you know, take control and make a difference. Because, you know, I used to go to protests and stuff, and now I don't. Why don't I? Well, I mean, I say it's because they're useless, because, well, I feel like they are. But is that a reason to give up? You know, that's another thing from the Code Geass show, the anime I mentioned before. There's a sentiment in there where it's like, you know, an unwinnable war or an unwinnable battle is different from losing. And so, that actually really, like, that I thought was some sharp wisdom right there as well. It's like, if you go out and you fight the impossible fight and either die or retreat wounded with no way to survive, or knowing with you've got no way to win, but you tried anyway, you know, that's still honorable, you know? And that, because the Japanese, you know, if a Japanese guy is telling you something is honorable, it's probably honorable. So I thought that really resonated with me. And, you know, unfortunately I do need to find a day job, so I can't keep fighting the good fight, because it is an insurmountable fight. You have to keep going and you have to keep being persistent, you know, and sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you don't. And I'm the you don't guy, you know. I know people, or I used to know people who have now become successful. And yes, it is hard to not compare yourself. But, you know, ironically, I don't like those people. They made compromises and sacrifices that I wouldn't have wanted to make. So I feel a little vindicated in being, you know, poor and not, you know, with stable income. So, you know, how are we on time here? 20 minutes. Almost 29. Okay, and then here's one final funny confession. A couple weeks ago, probably three podcasts ago, I think, three or four, I commented about, you know, where's my white privilege? You know, because I was like, oh, woe is me, I don't have a job. That is what I was talking about. Society doesn't like me, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and the whole idea about class warfare, and hey, I'm white, but I'm poor, you know? I don't have buckets of money in the bank. Technically, I live beneath the poverty line. Not that I feel like I do, but I do. Because, you know, my wife and I don't make that much money overall. But we survive. And we survive pretty comfortably. Although we don't ever go out and stuff. She does. I don't. But that's because I like it. Anyway, so I was bitching about, like, I wanted to make up a t-shirt called Where's My White Privilege. Which I still may do because it's funny. And this brings it back to the Android phone. Because, Pete, how can you afford a brand new Android phone? There are actually a bunch cheap. And I'm an anti-contract guy, which also might make you wonder how I could afford an Android phone if I can't, you know, if I don't get the, whatchamacallit, discount. Anyway, well, my dad paid for it, basically. Yeah, that's the sad thing. So, I'll bitch about being broke, but, every once in a while, my dad will do something really generous, and so, I got this check in the mail, and I open up the envelope, and I'm like, oh, there's my white privilege. So, yeah, there you go. So it's good to have that self-reflective thing going on every once in a while, to understand exactly when you're full of shit and when you're not. So most of the time, I don't see my white privilege much anywhere aside from the fact that, you know, I went to college and stuff. And even that's not technically white privilege because I went to college because my mom won the lottery. It's true. But it wasn't a lot. It was, I forget how much the original total was, but then my mom had to split it with two other people. And so it ended up just being about 38 grand a year, which was enough to allow us to live more comfortably than we had been, but it wasn't like our lives were changed overnight or anything. Although it was pretty neat having car phones in 1989. But that's how I was able to go to the college I went to, because the college I went to was too expensive. Anyway, and even that, my college was partially paid for by my dad, who didn't win the lottery because my folks are divorced. Anyway, the gist of it is, white privilege. It's there whether you're experiencing it immediately or not. I still think I'll make up that T-shirt though, because compared to the way my dad grew up and the way other people older than me grew up, they had it much easier because they literally could just waltz into the workplace and get jobs. You know, it's like, hey, I'm done with college, hire me. Job, please. Benefits. 401k, please. Thank you. You know, and everything was way more stable for past generations. And, you know, and now it's not. And I just think that's unfortunate, and it is unfair, and I'm not like, oh, society betrayed me, but what society did do is not adapt. You know, there's still this mentality where people are looked down upon because they don't have stable day jobs, you know, and it's really frustrating because it's like, hey, I'm no less of a person just because I don't have a day job, you know. It just means that I don't want to work at fucking McDonald's. Not that there's anything wrong with McDonald's. Well, actually there is, but that's another thing. We all, you know, if you're willing to take a job at McDonald's, by all means, go for it. I'm not going to look down on you because you work at McDonald's. Nobody should. It's like, obviously, you're not working at McDonald's because, well, maybe you are. Maybe you love McDonald's food. I don't know. Look, the point is, oh, I did the look thing. I hate that. The point is, you know, things used to be better for everybody. At least in the white race. Because they used to be worse for everybody else. Funny how that balances out, isn't it? The frustrating thing is that I see a world that could be good for all of us. And it isn't. I don't know why, but it isn't. It's because, you know, everybody's greedy. White people are greedy. I think I've come to think of race is less of a genetic thing and more of a cultural thing. So, like, you know, if you're Asian and you drive a Mercedes and you tend to not look both ways before you cross the street, yeah, you're white. The rest of us are not white. I don't even think about it in terms of, well, who's Asian then or who's black then. It's just, if you're not white, you're doing well. There are times when I'm white, and there are other times when I'm not. Usually when my dad is visiting in town, I'm white because he takes me everywhere that's nice and obnoxiously pricey. I remember last time he took us out, I'm like, Dad, could you just get me a new netbook and take me to, Nathan's Famous or something? Because I enjoy hot dogs much more than the salmon. I mean, the salmon is delicious, but
it's very expensive, and I could really use a new netbook. Anyway. All right. I am going to go drink more coffee. This has been the Pete for the 666 cast. Coming up on 35 minutes. Thank you very much for listening. Please let me know what you think. At reply me, the Pete, on Twitter, or at reply website 666. I am checking both now. I have a snazzy new Dell Streak to do it on, so which is an awesome phone. I should start doing a tech podcast so I can babble on about that too. Anyway, all right, thank you very much for listening. I'm shutting up now. The Pete signing off. See you again in a week's time. Thanks for listening, and check out the website, website666.com. We got a phone number. Call it. All right, bye.